This month at PostWrestlingCafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. PostWrestlingCafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.
Rewind to Dynamite from the Post Wrestling site. AEW lighting up the fuel. Sit back and enjoy the bubbly. As we hear from John and Waitay, where we're going, we don't need roads. And if the buck stops here, this thing might blow. Everything you hear, opinions of the show. And if you don't like it, go to the forums and let them know.
Let them know, everyone. It's John Pollock and Wei Ting continuing here on Rewind to Dynamite. Wei, it is officially April. It's WrestleMania month at Post Wrestling. We have lots coming up at Post Wrestling Cafe as we are going to be doing daily shows that week beginning Thursday, April 17th with John Cena joining me. We're going to have Kate from Montreal on several of these shows. We're going to have coverage both nights of WrestleMania and two Rewind Aways this month, including this past week's discussion of SummerSlam 1997 presented by Stridex.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That was a lot of fun to talk about. I mean, for most people, I think they will remember the main event with Bret Hart versus The Undertaker with Shawn Michaels as special guest referee in the midst of Bret's heel run. But of course, maybe the biggest story and most important and historical story coming out of it is, of course, the very unfortunate neck injury to Steve Austin from Owen Hart's pile driver. So we discussed both of those things at length, including a pretty memorable, in my opinion, cage match between Triple H and Mankind, Mick Foley. And also a very not memorable $1 million giveaway attempt on this particular show.
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times for the WWF in 1997. So we went deep into that particular event. So for this month, great time to jump on board. Any time of the month that you sign up, you get 30 days of access. So you don't have to time it out with the first of the month. You get 30 days regardless of when you sign up. We also offer annual subscriptions as well. If you want to stay on board for the entire year, you do get a bit of a discount as well if you do the annual subscription. And of course, that will include all of our bonus shows, WrestleMania week, along with Rewind Aways this month. We did SummerSlam 97. I'm going to be doing a Jumbo Tsuruta retrospective on the next Rewind Away. And we will have coverage of Collision, New Japan's Sakura Genesis and Windy City Riot, UFC 314 coming up later this month, and so much more, including the latest on Daredevil, which is now 7 episodes deep. Rich Fan and WH Park will be dropping a new episode on the cafe feed on Thursday morning. And Wei, I very much anticipate you eventually catching up on this current season because, dude, it's getting intense.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm looking forward to hearing you on the finale. I'm assuming you might be joining them or one of the shows at some point.
Well, it's very tough because they record these on Wednesday nights, literally as we are doing these. So Wednesdays are very tough for me. So unfortunately, I don't know. I don't know. We have had conversations, but we do not have any firm plans yet, but I will try.
I know somebody who might be able to move things around and hopefully get you there. But yep, that is a regular part now this year of the Post Wrestling Cafe. And just to let people know, you can also gift memberships now, postwrestling.com/gift if you want to gift the gift of entry into the Post Wrestling Cafe at any amount that you choose. If you think somebody would enjoy it, or if you just want to give some extra support and at the same time get an extra membership that you want to give to a friend who might enjoy these podcasts, postwrestling.com/gift.
Thank you. So we appreciate all of the support of Post Wrestling. And final note I want to make mention of is that on today's Pollock and Thurston, we were joined by Jesse Collings, who did this really interesting AEW fan survey that he put out there. He got about 800 responses to this survey from people all over the world and asking a lot of questions about their current fandom of AEW, what they like about the product, what they don't like about the product, individuals that they like following, which they dislike, as well as like live event experiences that they've had. We went through a lot of these different topics and sort of a overall kind of state of AEW, which I think if we were to have this conversation 6 months ago, it seemed like there was people were a lot more dire on AEW. And it does feel like if that was kind of their bottom point, it does feel as though it's kind of subsided. And, you know, and there's a lot of factors that you can attach that to. This is not a company that's on fire. So I think you can get a lot of kind of instructive criticism from stuff like this for a company that is still trying to engage its fan base to increase its level of popularity, but is at a time that the shows are generally well received, but it's creating that new fan base or bringing back people from the past. So it's a whole interesting discussion with Jesse Collings on today's show. Now it's time to go to Peoria, Illinois, 2,511, according to WrestleTix. And off the top, we get the announcement that the Death Riders, before the show, attacked Jay White, and he is out of the Owen Hart Cup. So my assumption is that this must be a legit injury that Jay White has, and one that is enough that A, they couldn't even shoot an angle on TV to write him off, and B, enough that, like, we're getting one of the first round matches on Sunday with Will Ospreay and Jay White's replacement, Kevin Knight. But, you know, they could have pushed this a couple of weeks. That tells me they realize Jay White's going to be out for some time if they're just completely removing him from this tournament and it's not just a 2 week injury or something to wait on. So I'm sure we will get some kind of update on Jay White, but it was pretty noteworthy.
Is reporting that the injury is legitimate and that White is actually expected to undergo surgery, according to
the report. That makes sense. Like, I think everyone assumed it was legit, and what the injury is, if it requires surgery, obviously very serious. He wrestled Kevin Knight on Saturday, so I don't know if it was stemming from that, because that was just on Saturday, and you know, that was 4 days ago.
Yeah, I mean, he cut that promo after the match.
Yeah, he did the promo, put over Kevin Knight. It was, you know, I watched it. It wasn't like anything stood out to me as being any kind of issue, but who knows? Yeah. It could have been something else or something in the match.
Very unfortunate. Not that I think any of us expected him to win the tournament, but you know, he was certainly one of the big names going into it, and maybe we'll talk about the brackets and Kevin Knight's inclusion later on.
John Moxley and Marina Shafir taking on Swerve Strickland and Willow Nightingale was the mixed tornado kicking off the show, and they brawl around the ring. And you know, unlike a lot of, you know, mixed tag matches, specifically like the rare time WWE does them, like, we got a fair amount of physicality here of like male on female, female on male. They were not keeping them apart here. They double team Moxley.
TBS must have some very special rules.
Oh, dude, TBS is like, do whatever. Like, you want to light a dude terrible on fire? Get the marshmallows out. They do not care. We also, after last week, disguising the injury, we got shirtless John Moxley, and we did get a close-up shot of his back, and it definitely looks like there will be some scarring from that, is what I detected.
And I imagine he'd probably be plenty proud of those scars too.
Moxley sets up for a paradigm shift to Willow when Swerve lifts up Shafir for big pressure, but both end up releasing the victim. The women are on the edge of the apron, and Shafir tries to lift up Willow. She's trying to get up for a powerbomb, but the way she's lifting her with a leg, it looks more like a stretch muffler. And she Willow just gets off the edge here to go through this table, and she was down on the ground. Not the smoothest looking powerbomb spot off the apron.
The crunch is really all the crowd was looking for, and they got that off the apron.
Willow eventually returns for a big Tower of Doom, including Swerve, who took the worst of this, her partner. Moxley then turns into a rear naked choke, but Willow powerbombs Shafir onto Moxley, breaking it. And then as Moxley is being set up for the house call, Shafir takes the bullet, pushing Moxley aside so Shafir gets hit with the house call. And Moxley is on the apron. Willow sends him off the apron, crashing through the table, which the camera totally missed. And we had to wait till after the commercial to air this. Like, how they missed this. It's like, we have the camera on the others, and you just hear the crowd pop for this. And it ends with the Babe with the power bomb pinning Marina Shafir in 13:31. But the big angle is afterwards, when Moxley comes back and lays out Willow with a paradigm shift, and they sell Willow sustaining a major neck injury as Doc Sampson is in. And this would be... We'd get updates throughout the night of Willow being injured here at the hands of John Moxley,
re-aggravating a prior neck injury. So that sort of being, you know, the the heat there. I thought the match was overall great. I found it thoroughly entertaining, and it had that like high intensity feel of most Death Riders or like BCC multi-person matches, like they managed to achieve in like an Anarchy in the Arena, for instance. This is like a much smaller scale, but like for TV, very appropriate level of like high intensity brawling around the ring. I thought they had some creative double team spots that sort of like played with the boundaries of what they might be allowed to do. Yes, we did see like male on female violence, but it was really just kind of kept to like one or two moves each, right? The rest of it was more of a threat of it. So I thought they kind of played within those bounds well. Now, the one spot I didn't particularly love, if I kind of had to nitpick, was when they were each threatening to attack the other's female partner. I wouldn't really think so much of it if it was like, I don't know, like two non-wrestlers that were also in the ring with them. But man, like, especially with a character like Marina Shafir, who should be the enforcer for Jon Moxley, like she's clearly trying to be like the China, right? Like, and the sort of idea behind, in my opinion, that sort of character is that she could beat the men if she really wanted to. So for like Swift to just kind of grab her at will and threaten her, I didn't particularly love that for her, but overall I found the match very entertaining and thought they did a great job presenting what felt like a novel concept for AEW TV.
Excluding ROH matches, this was Shafir's first match on like AEW programming since 2023.
That's crazy. Wow. Well, they've really protected her, and I think they've done a great job of rebranding her.
Renee is in the back with FTR and Paul Turner, as Dax Harwood has been fined $10,000 for his for putting his hands on Paul Turner. And Dax, I'm so sorry. And I just want to give this check to you myself. So you take your wife out for dinner. 10 grand dinner, Paul Turner is about to have here. And Dax explains to Renee, me and Cash, we're going to put our issues aside this Sunday. One mishap is not going to eclipse our relationship. And he apologizes for shoving Cash last week. He didn't mean to, and he loves him. Cash says, yes, we are brothers and we'll be fine on Sunday. But after Sunday, we're going to talk.
Mm-hmm. I feel like, you know, between this and what we saw last week, I've seen enough of this to be able to confidently say that I think this will be one of AEW's strongest storylines heading into the summer, maybe even for the entirety of the year. I think they're pacing it really well, slow but with significant movement, even in like just three appearances so far. I think the characterization, that we've already received, it has been strong. Like, it's the type of story where you can already understand everybody's very distinct motivations, and it's one where no side is clearly bad. It's just like sort of a complicated clash of perspectives, and I'm really loving the pace of what they're giving us so far.
On to the brackets for the Owen Hart Cup. We'll start off with the men's bracket. So on the one side, we have Will Ospreay against Kevin Knight, who they explained is replacing Jay White. Brody King against Konosuke Takeshita. And then on the other side, it's Mark Briscoe against Kyle Fletcher and Hangman Page against, it's a Tony Khan booked tournament. That means a wild card in there as well. Wei, what did you think about the Elite Eight?
Right, yeah. So, you know, they had told us Ospreay, they had told us Page, they had told us Jay White, and I felt like that would sort of be the tone of the names that we'd be getting. And like we still have some big names here. You know, Takeshita I kind of consider to be on that level.
Brody Takeshita King should be in this. There's others that are questionable.
Brody King, we're talking about like how many people we believe could actually win this, I don't think he's on that level, although I would argue he should be in this tournament just for the spotlight of it. Briscoe, I think, is much more difficult to justify, like if we're trying to make this sort of like an elite caliber, you know, type of tournament. Not that he's
I get that it was probably like a legit, like last minute replacement here that you have. It's like Kevin Knight is literally 0-1 in this company. It's to me, it's one of those things where, you know, I know I do gripe a lot about these tournaments. This is like the big tournament. Like this is their equivalent of like the Royal Rumble to set their contender for the biggest show of the year. And when you don't have like an MJF, to me is the most glaring one here. Like, why is an MJF not in this?
I would add to that several of the champions that are currently there.
Certainly.
Like Kenny, Okada, you know.
Even ones that aren't, like Ricochet. It's almost like if you're a champion, that means you don't go for the world title. And if you're challenging for another title, you're not going for the main title. Yeah. And that's
we don't have this problem with the women. And obviously, it's a much smaller pool that they're playing with the women. But you have champions that are entering as
yes, they should. Absolutely. Yeah, so it really throws that one out. Like, I just feel like this tournament, it should be the your top guys, and there should be many different options that you can forecast as winning this.
Although didn't MJF give an excuse for why he didn't enter the last tournament, and it was because he wanted an easier path to victory.
Tonight I heard him say a promo about how he needs the Hurt Syndicate to get him back to the AEW championship. So yeah. This could end up being the wild card, but no Jeff Jarrett in this, and that yep. I mean, he does have like the connection with Hangman Page, but I don't think people are going to be going crazy either if Jarrett is the wild card here.
Yeah, yeah. I always thought like they might have dropped the Jarrett MJF story to wait for the Owen.
That's
before
what I
picking
thought.
It back up. But the fact that MJF's not a part of this, and I wonder if at this point like how likely a Jarrett being there would be as well, tells me maybe they did drop that, you know, completely cold. Because if you're going to have any sort of nostalgic like. Sort of like Rocky Balboa story, it would be Jeff Jarrett this year. So we'll see.
I guess the other name that you could throw up for that wild card too is like what the status is of a Josh Alexander if you were to debut him in a spot like that as well.
Yeah.
So the women and
it's tricky for him though, because like he has to lose at some point. Unless he's going to the final, but then you wouldn't have a very believable final, because I don't know how many people would think that he'd win.
I would not see Hangman getting knocked out in the first round. But the final will be at Double or Nothing, and they'll do Ospreay and Kevin Knight on Sunday's Dynasty card.
Do you have any predictions so far, just looking at the brackets? If our intern Simon, if you don't mind bringing them back up.
I would say Ospreay is your favorite to win this, and I think that you could see Hangman probably in the finals with him. I think those would be the two people. I think those are the only two that you could see winning this. I do think you'll get some outstanding matches in this. Like, there's a very good possibility we're going to get to see Ospreay and Takeshita on TV in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, I think we're going to get Ospreay and Takeshita again in the second round, and maybe Takeshita wins it this time because Ospreay beat him like last year. And then I could see Paige going on to face Fletcher, and then could we get Paige Takeshita with Paige winning? Depends on who the wild card is as well, of course.
Yeah, no, I see Paige, and I would lean towards Ospreay and Paige in the final. That would be my thought on things here. It's WrestleMania month on the Post Wrestling Cafe, and we are going to have wall-to-wall coverage of the events from Las Vegas beginning Thursday, April 17th. We're going to be doing daily shows on the Post Wrestling Cafe featuring myself, John Cena, and many more of the Post Wrestling staff. Plus, this month, it is two editions of Rewind Away as we cover SummerSlam 1997 and a retrospective of Jumbo Tsuruta. All that, plus coverage of New Japan's Sakura Genesis, Windy City Riot, Collision Course, and of course, Daredevil Born Again on MCU later. PostWrestlingCafe.com, $6 gets you in the door. The women's bracket has Jamie Hayter taking on Billy Starks, and then Thunder Rosa against Chris Statlander. On the other end, Julia Hart taking on Mercedes Moné, and Harley Cameron versus Athena. So they've already teased like Mercedes and Athena. You could definitely do the story of Athena upsetting Mercedes in the tournament, and they can run that back at All In. But they've at least teased that one. This one is kind of more open-ended. I think you could see several different directions here. I would say of the eight here, I think Jamie Hayter stands to gain the most here, because unfortunately, like, she just lost so much momentum that a tournament like this might be able to reinvigorate her in a sense that she's sort of just been out of sight, out of mind for so long that hopefully she has, it's possible she could go right to the finals here.
It's true, but I mean, I just don't really see them setting the stage for like a big Jamie Hayter run yet. Like, because I feel like if anybody's going to win the tournament, I feel like Tony would already be giving that spotlight to that person already, and I just don't see it with Hayter. Like, in fact, I actually see it more with Thunder Rosa, and just kind of seeing the way the brackets are laid out, I could see Hayter and Rosa both advancing. But then on the other side, I could see Monet and Athena definitely advancing. I could actually see Monet beating Athena, or Athena maybe Monet beating Athena, and then maybe Athena getting a rematch at All In for the championship where she gets the win back. Maybe.
Yeah.
It's definitely Monet Athena at All In, whether or not it's going to be, and it probably won't be for the championship, like this championship, right? So we're assuming neither of them will be winning the tournament, or at least I am. And therefore, I could see Thunder Rosa actually winning all of this because they are doing the whole thing with Thunder Tits. Thunder Tits explode at All In.
Oh, wow. Thunder Tits explode. I think that alone will sell many, many, many t-shirts.
Yeah, Texas, you know, so like Rosa has the connection.
All right, well, those are your brackets, and that takes us to our next match with Timeless Toni Storm and Penelope Ford, coming off Penelope's attack on Collision against Toni Storm. So Storm, again, incredibly over here. Ford is in control during the break and goes for this handspring back elbow, and Toni then starts biting Ford's lip as they get into strikes. The announcers were losing their mind off this. There's a back suplex. Storm lands the hip attack, hits a DDT for a two count, and then after absorbing a gut buster, Storm comes back, blocking a stunner to hit Storm Zero and wins in 8 minutes and 13 seconds. Megan Bain is out as they have their final stare down before Dynasty on Sunday.
Yeah, good match, I thought. I thought Ford continued to impress with like the improvements we see from her. I think she's doing well in the supporting role. She's sort of, again, not, I'd say she's missing a bigger personality, but she's not really there to kind of present it. Like she's there sort of in service of Megan Bain right now. So how do you feel about this match? Bain versus Storm coming up.
I'm interested to see it. I think it's a big test of Megan Bain in a situation like this. I think they've built this up that this has to be, you know, Toni Storm is coming off like one of the better AEW matches this year at the last pay-per-view. And this is one where I think people are going to be like, Toni Storm just feels like that match did take her to another level in terms of the perception among the audience and where she is as just one of AEW's top stars. Like, regardless of gender, she feels like one of the elite stars that this company has. So I think that there's going to be a lot of focus on this match to have Megan Bain to come out of this strong. And I feel Storm retains the championship out of this, but I think they certainly want to capitalize on like that Mariah May feud and continue this going with Toni. Then Renee asks Swerve for an update on Willow, and he talks about how tough she is, the history of her neck issues, and by the end of the night he's gonna get his hands on Jon Moxley. And there's Renee to be like, okay, you go off and kill him, I'll be back here. The Hurt Syndicate are out minus Shelton Benjamin, who couldn't make it due to weather. So MJF comes out and he says that, you know, Bob, I'm a big fan of yours. And he mentions how he hopes that Shelton Benjamin's safe, thinks that they got off on the wrong foot, and introduces himself to him and explains the value of it being good business for us to work together. With my help, you can keep the tag titles as long as you want, and you can help me become AEW champion. Lashley responds saying, out of respect to MVP, I'm not going to lay you out here. I don't like you. I don't trust you. And we don't need you. And unless you prove otherwise, and he goes to leave, and MJF is left that he has to prove his worth to the Hurt Syndicate. And so he walks out, and then Big Bill and Brian Keith are out for their match. So we have a stare down with Bobby Lashley. So we had to set up this tag title program without Shelton this week, but that is happening at Dynasty. So a lot going on in this segment. And it would appear, if MJF is going to be on the pay-per-view, it will only be in some fashion in this tag title match to maybe help them retain, but he has no match on Dynasty.
It'll be MJF getting involved as a way to prove his loyalty to the Hurt Syndicate, I suppose. So Shelton not showing up, I guess we could assume that to be due to legitimate travel issues. Probably.
Yeah, not. Like I think if it obviously wasn't any like angle or setup. So I'm imagining he legit missed the show.
Mm-hmm. I think the story is becoming interesting. I'm interested to see how it unfolds. It promises a lot of twists and turns. I'm expecting MJF to earn the Hurt Syndicate's trust so that he will be a member of the Hurt Syndicate temporarily, only to later screw them somehow. So I'm curious to see how it unfolds. I'm curious to know what MVP has planned in the back of his mind for all of this.
What if Jeff Jarrett joins the Hurt Syndicate and that's how we get this whole thing back on track?
Yeah, I think he'd be a perfect fit. Yes.
Big Bill and Brian Keith, they murdered these two guys who weren't even identified. This went a minute 23 with Big Bill chokeslamming one of these guys. And Big Bill says that they beat Top Flight. Then we beat these two geeks. We want a tag title shot. And that's about how easy it is. And MVP goes to answer. Lashley stops him from accepting. And they leave only for a half hour later for a graphic to come up and saying it's official. So I didn't know what the purpose of this was other than to
delay. They had to call Shelton. They have to, you know, get Shelton on the phone to agree, obviously.
Okay, well, Shelton gave them the okay on FaceTime. Renee interviews Mercedes, and she will face Julia Hart on Sunday in the opening round match. Harley enters with the return of the puppet, and they're teaming this Saturday on Collision against Hart and Athena, and she proposes the name Money Wrath Train. Shivani said they could maybe she could workshop that before Saturday.
Yeah. I was always disappointed they didn't pursue this relationship like right after these two had their match. And like, you know, Harley Cameron has kind of just been doing
Harley
stuff
Graham.
With like, yeah, Harley Graham, Beast Mortos. And I think it's a missed opportunity because these two clearly have excellent chemistry together, whether as opponents, but probably more so as like that type of odd couple that you just kind of love to cheer for. So we're getting it now. I wonder if it'll be sustained or just for this week.
Ospreay and Kevin Knight teaming up to take on Blake Christian and Lee Johnson. They keep, every time Blake Christian is on Dynamite, they promote that he's on a 7-match win streak on ROH, but he just loses on AEW.
What if he just never goes back to Ring of Honor?
Then he'll indefinitely have this 7-match win streak. He can never compromise this streak.
Just lose every match on Dynamite, but he still can be promoted as on a 7-match win streak.
Ospreay and Knight did diagonal dives off of into separate corners, and Ospreay gets the tag after the break, but Johnson yanks him to the floor. Christian does his flip through the ropes to the floor, and then a 450 stomp onto Ospreay. Ospreay comes back with a stun dog onto Johnson, and Knight hits a drop kick to Johnson off the shoulders of Christian into a poison rana, and it's Knight winning with a springboard clothesline on Lee Johnson in 9:17. What I thought was really notable in this match was that Will Ospreay realized, like, okay, I've got this opponent on Sunday. We are throwing Kevin Knight in here. 90% of, well, I won't say 90, that's high, but many people don't know who Kevin Knight is. So it was all Ospreay deferring to Kevin Knight, even like the facial reactions, like he's selling all of Kevin Knight's offense in the post-match. He's blown away by this guy. Like, he just made Kevin Knight the shine. He put the spotlight on Kevin Knight. And I think these two are going to just kill it on Dynasty. But it is one of those matches where if you're not familiar with Kevin Knight, this feels like someone that, you know, you don't know what to expect for a big Ospreay pay-per-view opponent.
So can we assume that Jay White versus Ospreay was going to be the match?
That's what I thought. I thought we were getting Ospreay and Jay White on Sunday. I'm sure that would have been the announcement.
I think it's very bold of Tony, actually, to put Kevin Knight, not just, you know, to take on Jay White's spot, but to like continue with the pay-per-view match as is. I think that alone tells the audience that Kevin Knight is somebody that we should be paying attention to, because in just like less than a week, he's put into this major tournament. He's put onto the pay-per-view against Will Ospreay. So that sort of like spotlight alone, I think, is enough to tell everybody, hey, like, this is going to be a player. And you, John, I totally agree that in this match, they gave great focus to him, you know, by even pairing him with Ospreay here, even as a tag team, amongst like these high flyers, like, you know, Blake Christian, it kind of gives you like gives the audience it helps categorize like the type of wrestler that we should be thinking of Kevin Knight as this like elite level high flyer, you know.
And so Kevin Knight, and I would imagine like this was like a pretty like late decision to get him onto the pay-per-view, because he is doing the MLW Battle Riot show on Saturday night in Long Beach, California, and then has to get to Philadelphia the next day for what I think you could confidently say is the biggest match of his career on Sunday.
Up until this point, sure.
So that's That's a pretty busy 24-hour stretch that Kevin Knight has coming up.
Yeah, I imagine he might. I wonder how many risks he will take, what sort of a match he'll have on the Saturday.
Well, he's working with Kushida against Satoshi Kojima and Okamura, and I think it'll be a relatively safe match if it's Kojima that's in there. He'll take some chops. The ops are in the back, and Joe explains why he formed the ops. After all these months, he saw the battlefield changing, and he needed a different arsenal. So he formed this group. And tell me if you took anything different from this. They're going to the pay-per-view to sit and watch.
No, that's exactly what I took from it. It's exactly what they did at the last pay-per-view, right? If I'm not mistaken, didn't they just go to a private box?
Yes, Joe, who a year ago was our AEW champion, another man omitted from the Owen Hart Cup as well. So I don't know.
He's got better things to do. He's going to sit.
He just wants to go and watch wrestling shows. Like, that seems to be their gimmick. Is this guy on the right likes to film wrestling. This guy likes to watch wrestling. And Hook, he's just along for the ride. He wants to do his like one match a month.
He wants to sit there and eat chips, like, you know, like all of us, right? I mean, clearly, like, the fact that they're letting him speak here, I'm hoping it's supposed to signify that they're going to do something of significance at the pay-per-view, because what else would be the point of this? You know, this is one of those cases where, like, maybe the show has so many people that certain months you're just not going to have, or certain periods of like several months, you're not going to have really anything of significance for them to do.
Yes. Paging Scorpio Sky. Brody King against Lance Archer.
Where has he been?
Dude, God, I have no idea.
Scorpio Sky. Okay. Ring of Honor. Like, has been. Okay.
When was his last match?
Scorpio Sky's last match. Not. Well, Honor Club in October.
Okay.
And then he's been working indies since then. Very sporadic. Yeah,
that seems like a great usage of his time. Brody King and Lance Archer with Don Callis on commentary. So full-on meat match, which was a chant that Taz says he didn't like. He doesn't like meat forever chants. He mentioned about the vegans out there. There's a sidewalk slam by Archer for a two count. Then a choke slam is delivered to Brody. He kicks out, and King puts him down in the corner, finally hits the cannonball. And after Archer prevents a power bomb, King stops the choke slam, and he just comes off the rope, big lariat, and he pins Archer in 10 and a half minutes. Don Callis not looking happy about this, but the idea here is that Archer was trying to weaken him because Brody has to face Takeshita, his stablemate, in the first round of the Owen Hart Cup.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, really fun, hard-hitting meat match here. Added some variety to the card. I'm glad to see King continue to get these sort of spotlights. He started, like, we kind of have, like, an unofficial meat rankings, don't we? And I would suggest King maybe tied with Hobbs, would you say, at the top of that division? Who's on top of the
I'm
bench?
Not trying to be a stickler, but you're just, like, throwing out these names, and I'm thinking about these brackets. Like, Hobbs is another one. Like, where are all these guys? Yes, yeah.
He couldn't sign up in time. You know, it's, like, one of those things where, like, you don't know when. You just, like, whoever gets their name first.
I would prefer if they said, like, it was just a draw. We had the top 20 contenders. Well, if it's Kevin Knight, it's, like, your top 30 contenders, and we just randomly drew names.
Yeah.
Well. Collision on Saturday, which is being taped as we speak. Pac against Cash Wheeler. That sounds great. Top Flight against The Crew, which is Leo Rush and Action Andretti's name. Look at this. Speedball Mike Bailey against Dralistico. Mercedes Moné and Harley against Julia Hart and Athena. And Tomohiro Ishii and the aforementioned Powerhouse Hobbs against Konosuke Takeshita and Kyle Fletcher. Takeshita, who then has to fly to Japan for Sakura Genesis on Saturday.
He might be on the same flight as Ishii.
Maybe he will be, yes. This Collision card looks excellent on paper.
I think they've done a great job with Collision. Like, especially the last week, it felt like an actual show that you don't want to miss, because things of significance take place on the show. They're loading it up with, like, pretty top names, and yeah, I think they're doing a good job with it.
And the main event was Claudio Castagnoli against Cope that went nearly 18 minutes. And I can't say, like, this Peoria crowd, I think they realized that they were in for a lengthy one here. But as things built up, the crowd engaged too. We had kind of a just back and forth from the start. Claudio takes over. They go through a commercial break, and then Cope is just getting beaten and beaten when he manages a bulldog off the top rope. And the way this guy lands, you cannot convince this man that he broke a leg last year, because he just throws caution to the wind on some of these maneuvers as he goes down. And Shivani's like, you know, this guy did break his leg coming down in similar fashion last year, but you know, he's good to go.
He also had a broken neck at one point, and he's, you know, I guess that maybe sometimes, I don't know, breaking a body part makes it stronger. I don't know if that's true or not.
Remember when Austin came back from his neck surgery, and what did he decide to do? Hey, Benoit, how about you give me 10 Germans? And yeah, then let's do that on all the live events, and we'll do it in all our matches. Well, okay, Steve, sounds great.
You got to test out the quality of the surgery, right? If you're...
Yes.
Yeah.
Claudio manages a giant swing on Cope, but then Cope lands the impaler moments later, gets a two count, and then Claudio applies the sharpshooter, turns to the crossface. Cope breaks out and applies the grindhouse. And after a power slam is delivered to Cope on the edge of the apron, he's sent over the barricade, beats the count in, and after a pop-up European, Cope grabs onto the rope, neutralizer is hit, and Cope kicks out for the big near fall. So Claudio is just tired of this. He goes to get the chairs. This his revenge for being taken out before Revolution. And Bryce rips away one of the chairs, and as his back is turned, Cope hits him right in the balls. And then delivers the spear, pinning Claudio in 17 minutes and 38 seconds as he gets the win going into their trios title match on Sunday.
I thought this, I really enjoyed this match. I thought it was the perfect type of setup match, you know, for, I guess in this case, it would be a trios match. I thought Copeland was able to show really good vulnerability. And I don't know if it's like maybe his age finally starting to show a little bit, but like, or if it was just more than likely like really good selling. But like, you know, especially later on in the match, he looked sort of like tired, and again, it could just be selling, but like, you know, I think back to like why I enjoyed the Sting run so much, and it's because he looks like a guy in his 50s who shouldn't be in that ring. And so 60s. Every 60s at the time, I'm sorry, how dare I 60s in his ring, who should not be in the ring by that point. And so everything he did, every move he took, I was kind of on the edge of my seat for. I guess Copeland is like so athletic still, in my opinion, at this age, that I often forget actually how old he is. But it's sort of to the detriment of like the matches, right? Because showing that level of vulnerability actually makes all of his wrestling that much more exciting to watch, all of the matches that much more impressive, right? So I thought he showed really good vulnerability here towards the end. And I feel like he's entering that phase where he can kind of use his age to his advantage.
So what you're saying is that we better be ready for this senior scramble, because we might have a sleeper on our hands.
The senior scramble may be a concept that might be starting to spread after this.
It's going to be oozing vulnerability, I think. Yeah. I enjoyed this match quite a bit. I think once it got going, I think like the crowd was like, this was not one of those crowds where it was like a low number, but they made up for it in volume. But by the end, I would say like the closing stretch of this, like it got really good between these two. And I thought this was like a really well done match. And this was a pairing like I was looking forward to seeing a singles match between these two, and I'm glad they got the time to do it. And not a super clean finish, but it omitted like your typical Death Riders type of run-ins at the end. So they get the win going into the trios title.
Support for this Post Wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chopped Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from Post Wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA Podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. That's chopped-tees.com/postwrestling.
But more to come after this, because Renee is in the back still trying to get updates, and we have Swerve and Nana in the midst of some argument where Nana storms off. So that will probably play into something on Sunday. Swerve is interviewed by Renee, but he just storms past her saying, "I'm looking for your husband." So at least we're calling things out now. And then Hangman appears super late for work. At this point, like,
he might be doing Collision. You know, he might be sticking around for.
I hope so, because he comes in and He tells Swerve, you're wasting your time with the Death Riders. And he says, and all of security is in because it's like, you know, this is like CM Punk and the Bucks back in the day. It's like they have to be on separate sides of the arena. So they just run at them to separate them. And Swerve is told by Hangman, I'm a man of my word. I said you would never win the title again. And then they're yelling back and forth. And Hangman yells, you broke into my house. Swerve yells, you burnt down my house. Hangman says, you deserved it. And Swerve, contemplating this, acknowledges, I know. What? I know. So he acknowledges that he deserved to have his house, his childhood home, burnt down. And this catches Paige off guard, who leaves and doesn't know what to make of this. And then, well, first of all, was this the breaking of the ice between the Swerve and Hangman divide after all these years?
I would say this broke the ice, certainly. This was beautiful, man. This was like straight out of a movie. This was their, you know, a Save Martha moment. Did you ever see that? Superman, Batman?
Sorry.
Yeah, anyway, this is like, I know, how beautiful, right? How poetic. And I think in this one moment, first of all, like,
is that Dominic Greeny playing?
Yes,
security?
It is. Yeah. Violence is forever. Kevin Koo was there too. So, earning some extra bucks here, you know, doing security on Dynamite. But I thought like this scene just kind of told you a whole lot about their relationship. I mean, Paige being shocked at this admission of, guilt from Swerve Strickland. It tells you that maybe this was all Paige was looking for, you know. He's been so driven by his anger for Swerve. Now being faced with the idea that he actually has to forgive Swerve, I don't know if he really knows what he's supposed to do with himself, because this was his whole reason for living, is hating Swerve. And now that he's kind of got what he's after, Swerve admitting guilt, Paige is probably on some sort of, like, you know, mental crusade of like figuring out how's he supposed to come to grips with this. And I think Swerve, like, as part of this entire babyface transformation, this sort of like unsaid feeling of just Rick realizing that he was the one who started all of this, and that his sins were ultimately what led to his whole childhood house burning down. I think it's beautiful. They continue to do such a great job involving this relationship.
Yeah, I know that if you are to say, like, who is, like, the main character of AEW, you're probably going to get just a wide variety of different names. But I think, like, it's stuff like this that it really does hammer home, like, as much of this story of AEW is almost like the story of Hangman Page. Like, in some ways, he is, like, the central character that isn't always built around in that way. But I feel like when they get everything in alignment with Hangman Page, it just feels like, and this is his dance partner. It's like, it's him and Swerve are just going to be connected.
They're Batman and Superman.
That's what they are. And I thought this was a really great segment, because there's a lot that you can, like, I just think people love this story between these two, and the many ways of where they can always revisit it. And it's not as though it, like, they've overstayed their welcome with constantly being attached to one another. So Swerve is then contemplating all this when the Death Riders jump him. They toss him through glass in the back, and Marina Shafir is in a sling after all of this, and they drag him to the ring. So it's 5-on-1, and Yuta pours glass onto the mat, and Claudio powerbombs him on the glass as the Death Riders exit. And as they leave, Swerve sits up like the Undertaker and just starts smiling, and the smile turns to laughter as this frightens John Moxley. And that is our final visual going into, well, we have Collision on Saturday, but that was our closing angle on Dynamite.
Yeah. Good way to close close the go home show. I wondered if they were looking for blood from that, the glass powerbomb. Like, the fact that they showed close-ups of it and we didn't see blood. I recognize we're coming off of like one of the most grotesque, you know, visuals of like a weapon or to somebody's back in the midst of all this. But the fact that he didn't bleed, I mean,
big deal. He's fine. Yeah. He scratches. Does Swerve bring out Spike in this match on Sunday?
I know it's not his weapon, but
this thing's now synonymous with
his version of Spike is, what would it be? What's his signature weapon?
The hypodermic needle.
The needle. Yes. Yes. I think he brings that out.
That will be his weapon of choice. How did you think about, how did you feel about Dynasty coming out of the show and how these 2 hours promoted the pay-per-view?
Well, just as a show alone, I really enjoyed the 2 hours. I thought it was an entertaining show with good wrestling and good storyline progression. Its effect on Dynasty, I felt like I was...
Are you looking forward to this show?
I'm looking forward to Dynasty anyway, regardless of, I think, you know, the quality of this one. I thought this show did a decent job of reminding you of some of the big matches on it, but didn't necessarily decrease or increase my interest. How about you?
Yeah, I wouldn't say this was like one of their best like go home shows, but I would say at the end of it, I wish this Moxley Swerve program had more runway to lead up to. It just feels like this is such a short build to get to with one of your main, like one of your big challenges for Moxley being Swerve. So I just overall, I feel like they are coming back pretty quick with a pay-per-view. I think the trios title match, like I think that people are interested in this of like what they're going to do with Copeland and like, is this going to be Cash and Dax ultimately aligning and they turn on Cope, or do you go a separate route like that? And Dax is the one that turns. I think people are intrigued by where that can go more so than just the match. It's kind of the progression of the story itself. And beyond that, I think they've done a relatively good job with Megan Bain in these 4 weeks leading up to this. Like, I think this is an intriguing match, mainly just to see like Megan Bain in what you would assume is like a 15-minute or so match, and to see like if she is up to that standard to be able to hang with like your main women in AEW. So there's a lot of interesting aspects to the show.
And of course, Omega Ricochet Speedball, like that's bound to maybe deliver on high expectations. 8 matches so far. Does that sound light to you for an 8?
Oh, we're getting more. We're getting way more. They have the 0 hour to throw onto this. So I'm sure we will get more. Let's just quickly run through the card. The 8 matches that have been announced so far. It's Jon Moxley against Swerve Strickland for the AEW Championship. Is anyone expecting a title change?
No, I think Mox is such a big threat that I think like the right time for him to lose would be something like an all-in, which we're very close to. Although, no, we're not actually that close. We're actually still pretty far.
3 months.
I don't completely rule it out, but I don't see it myself.
Timeless Toni Storm against Megan Bain for the AEW Women's Championship. I see Toni Storm retaining here, and I think it's more so trying to make Megan Bain into a player here. But Toni Storm, like she lost so decisively in the tag last week that I think she gets the win here.
I think so too. Yeah, but I think the important thing will be to see how they protect Megan Bain coming out of all of this, because she is a major prospect, one that I wouldn't have necessarily expected to be put into a title match on pay-per-view so soon. So the fact that they're doing that.
And she's not in the Owen tournament, and you know, we see like the number of like women's matches we get on these shows. Like Megan Bain could very well fall into like that women's vortex after she gets the title match.
She has to come out of this looking like a legitimate threat, and maybe somebody who might even, you could say, should have won the match if not for blank. So what is that blank?
Kenny Omega, Ricochet, and Speedball. This sounds spectacular on paper. I envision Kenny retaining the championship here, and it'll be interesting to see like if they, like I think everyone's expecting Omega and Okada for July. It's probably too early to start kind of ramping that up at this point. But
Kenny doesn't need the belt for that one because Okada has one.
Well, I could see the two of them, like that could be a reason to unify as well.
Yeah, could.
This is also a big showcase for Speedball in this match to really establish him and just go out here and have this like incredible three-way that they have the potential to have on Sunday.
Yeah, I see Kenny retaining. I think he's still being established on a pretty fresh run right now. I think the big question is who takes the pinfall, and Yeah. Who would you say takes the pin in this one?
I think Big Rick has taken the fall here.
Ricochet. Okay. Yes. Yeah. I think I would agree. I think Speedball, you might still need to somewhat protect. I think Ricochet is a pretty established heel at this point that I think you could afford to beat.
It also gives you a reason to do Omega and Speedball, like on TV or even next mm-hmm. month, if you want to, just to keep Omega busy when he's also not in this tournament. The Death Riders against Rated FTR for the Trios belts. And yeah, this is one I am sure they have something like really elaborate mapped out with this Rated FTR story. Yeah. And one that I honestly could see the potential scenario where everyone thinks that Dax and Cash are going to break up, but it's actually Cash aligns with Dax and they cut out Cope. Yep. And I mean, down the road, that could be like at some point, and it's early, you do have to get to this Cope and Christian reunion. Yep. And to me, that would be the team to do it against is FTR.
That some point could be All In when we think about Rated FTR and think about like what's a big enough match for them. I think an Edge and Christian reunion up against FTR feels like a stadium level match to me. So I could see that certainly being the destination. I really look forward to seeing how that story plays out, because I think for that scenario to work out, you would have to have Copeland turn heel, wouldn't you? Christian's not turning babyface.
It'd be a tough turn for Christian, but it's We'll see. Anyway.
But do you see title change or no?
No, I don't think so.
I don't think so either. No.
Unless you want to like ride this story out longer. Like you could put the Trios belts on them and then it's like the title loss, but I just feel they've run with this team for so long that I don't think you need to do a title change here to get to your story, especially if you want it to kind of peak soon, which I think you do want to have whatever turn you're going to do come up in a relatively quick fashion. Jericho and Bandido title versus mask for the ROH championship.
I don't think Bandido loses his mask.
I think it would be just terrible for him to lose his mask here. It does feel like odd to do just an ROH title. I guess it is the ROH title, but just like, it's going to be right in the middle of this card. I'm more so curious just how much this crowd gets into it. Because sometimes you do these mask matches and they just get super heat. And, you know, they've done, I think overall, like it's been a good build that they've done just from the last pay-per-view with Gravity. You know, it's not been the front and center program. But this is one where I just think people can get into the stakes of a guy's mask being on the line. And this one might over-deliver just in terms of, like, crowd response.
Yeah, I expect Gravity to get involved. I wonder if Mom will get involved, Mrs. Bandido.
She should slap Jericho from the front row or something.
Yeah. Like, I think that would be enough to get the crowd interested regardless of their interest. But I actually think the crowd for the stipulation will be pretty interested for this match. So, yeah.
What if Bandido wins here and then Jericho wants revenge, and it's title versus hair.
Awesome. Wait, who's... Oh, Bandito's hair?
No, Jericho has to put his hair up to try and get the title from Bandido.
Yes, I love that. I love that. Do you think Jericho would be willing?
Yes, I do.
To shave his head?
I think he would.
Awesome. Yeah, that'd be great.
Daniel Garcia, Adam Cole, no time limit for the TNT Championship. I think they're going to go the whole pay-per-view. I think they're going an hour. No,
sure.
I don't.
Why not?
But this one pretty much has to go. It's definitely got to go above 20 minutes. It's got to go beyond what they've already done. So you're probably looking at like a 25, 30 minute match that they're going to have. I don't know. It's Daniel Garcia. It's like he's clearly someone that they see on the ascent, but it's like, again, I'm going to be annoying about these brackets, but it's like, it's kind of like all these people that are excluded from this, and Adam Cole too. And Adam Cole has just been in this weird rut, but the matches with Daniel Garcia, they have been good. I think this will be a very good match. The question is just sort of people's overall interest level at that this particular moment in, you know, this belt that's like fourth or fifth down the rung.
Yeah, really. Unfortunately, under Garcia, who I really like, but under him, this TNT title has seemingly like really dropped in terms of significance, you know, I would say Kenny holding his international championship and Okada holding the Continental Championship. So I at this point, I would expect a title change. I think Adam Cole really needs that shot in the arm. I think the entire faction needs a shot in the arm. And hopefully Daniel Garcia can move on to something maybe of more significance than actually being, you know, this TNT champion, which has kind of made him a TNT exclusive property at this point.
Will Ospreay, Kevin Knight, I think this could be just absolutely out of this world. It wouldn't even surprise me if they put this in the opener on the pay-per-view, to be honest.
Yeah, it would be great.
I think it's going to be spectacular. I think this is going to be I just think Ospreay is going to go out there to make this guy in front of this AEW audience in this one night. And I think that this could just be like Kevin Knight is a super talent. And when you are in there with Will Ospreay, it's only going to accentuate it that much more. So this could be really, really spectacular. Like you look on paper, like there are several of these matches that could just be total top tier in terms of like, you know, holding up this level of AEW quality on these pay-per-views.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, this doesn't need much story going into it because it's just a part of a tournament. It's a first round, and these two are going to dazzle. Hopefully, you know, towards the front of the card, but they could really put this anywhere. So yeah. It's Will Ospreay on pay-per-view. It can't not be good.
Anything beyond Moxley and Swerve closing the show in your estimation?
No.
Pretty safe bet.
Yeah,
Moxley. And then Mercedes Moné, Julia Hart for the Owen Hart Cup. Yeah, we'll see. We'll see how this goes.
Monet is undefeated. Monet is not losing.
Oh, I'm not so much the outcome. It's more so just, you know, what kind of a match that they have together. Certainly, you know, Julia Hart, she's a quality opponent. And yeah, we will see what they are able to put together here.
Yeah, yeah. I expect good things. You know, I think Moné like brings the best out of most of her opponents. I would say lately almost all of her opponents. So I'm looking forward to it. We also have, of course, Hurt Syndicate versus Big Bill and Brian Keith.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
So nine
Hurt
matches.
Syndicate against Big Bill and Brian Keith, which is I don't think the Hurt Syndicate are losing because that's their gimmick. They don't lose.
Yeah, I don't think they're losing. And I think like we discussed, MJF perhaps likely to show involvement somehow.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, we'll see by Sunday. I hope Big Bill and Brian Keith don't come out of this just looking like total like cannon fodder here at like losing to these guys who, I mean, it's,
and if they fail and Jericho also loses, then what happens to the learning tree?
Yeah, you are pushing that as well. Like this idea that, like, I don't see anyone expecting them to win the tag titles here and not proving their worth to Jericho. So yeah, you do have that kind of group breaking apart at the foundation of the tree itself,
the roots.
All right, so that is Dynasty. We are going to be live Sunday night. As soon as the pay-per-view ends, we will be up at youtube.com/postwrestling. And for those of you on the YouTube channel, we're going to say goodbye to you. On the XL edition, we're going to continue on with the show. We're going to share our thoughts on Dark Side of the Ring, covering Ludwig Borga, and we will also get some of your feedback and questions as well. So thanks to everyone for sticking around with us, and we're now going to head on over to talk some Ludwig Borga. This month at PostWrestlingCafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. PostWrestlingCafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.